Do it all again. Daggy and Barney with you for Footy and Frothies. Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Well, thank you. Getting there. Good. Energy's back up now if you record. We were both ready for bed a second ago, but here we are.
I've just been waiting, counting down the days, the minutes, the hours to see that lovely smile on your face that could not have been whacked off your head.
You probably should have whacked it off my head
on Saturday night.
The way I was carrying on. But anyway, the world's a much better place for the fact the Tigers suck. Could you imagine me if they were any good?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much time we'd be spending together.
I'd be like a Panthers fan. Be terrible. But anyway, here we are. Good weekend, though. Good weekend. Beautiful weather. Some okay footy. Some very mediocre footy as well, which we'll get to. But
and a whole heap of injuries, unfortunately.
And there's an extensive list. We may as well start there, I suppose. Let me just – this is just a very quick whip around. Where are we? As a start, we've got Mitch Moses, fractured foot, 8 weeks. Reece Walsh, 4 to 6 with his head. Cleary, 2 to 4 with a hamstring, although just watching – before, they seem to suggest it's not as bad as that, but we'll see. Lindsay Collins, hamstring, nearly, it could be a month. Sorensen, a knee, could be a month. Cartwright, ribs. Was he named, actually? I didn't notice.
Yeah, he's been named. But undergo a test.
It's pain management. Worst case will be, 6 weeks. Fractured rib. Toby Rudolph, a month. Finucane and a concussion. He's out this week. Torpeki, the same. Ruben Cotter, a couple of weeks. Cam Murray limped off at training but was named. Piakura, same. I think he is actually out. I think he's done some damage. Sandon Smith could be 6 weeks with his elbow. And poor old Tino is a gone for the year. ACL, which is a shame for him. Definitely a shame for the Titans. I don't even where do we even start? Thoughts of all of them, obviously.
Yeah, 100%. It's taken a bit of shine off this weekend's games, to be honest. There was a few there that I was really hanging out for, which the lineups now look a little different, but and then Royce Hunt did his calf as well in the warm up to that Tigers game.
They've got some issues.
One short for the entire match, which was fantastic for the Sharks. But
and they're missing Hamlin Ueli as well, and Rudolph as well. We mentioned him.
Lost 3 forwards in that game. They've done well, but a big one obviously with Tino, lifeblood of that side, captain. Every bit about the effort is just the barometer for effort in that team. And for a team that wasn't putting out a huge amount of effort, they've now lost their sole leader in that pack. So that looks horrible now for the Titans.
They've been crunched into the spoon, and unfortunately, I haven't seen any upside yet in all preseason. So watch on that. They do get for Campbell back, and Fifita was named 18th man. A couple other ones just quickly. Albert Hopewadi burnt himself making dinner. He's out this week as well. And right. Alex Twile, I believe, will sit out with concussion protocols as well. A couple of late ones there.
So, probably that's pretty convenient for Sebastian Kruse to come back into the side this week.
Yeah.
But, a lot of teams, obviously, Sharks have lost pretty much a forward pack going into this one. Mm. Some significant changes in the halves with Cleary and Moses. And, there's going to be a few understrength teams, least of all the Broncos running out this weekend. So.
Yeah, Reynolds named, which we'll get to in the preview show. But some interesting – I don't know if they are even toss of the coins. I wouldn't even trust a coin in some of those games at this stage.
No, 100%.
But some interesting games to preview. Only judiciary news was Leo Thompson Kopp took his week for that –
tunneling.
Alleged tunneling. Probably unlucky.
And you can't run in at that pace and turn your back into a bloke who's jumping for the ball. It's dangerous. Could have ended up a lot worse for it was Ponga, was it, underneath that one? But no, it wouldn't have been Ponga. But it's a very dangerous act. And it really doesn't need to be in the game. So
look, I guess I better ask you about the Taylan May incident. Yep. Annesley said he should have been charged. I just thought it was unfortunate head clash.
Yeah, it is. It is. I probably agree with Annesley when what he's come out and said this week. Obviously, Dale copped it last year from the Sharks. A little bit of bias there, but he charged out of the line and caused a head clash, which I think he copped 2 or 3 weeks for. So.
Yeah, I think he was 3. Actually, that's literally like for like, isn't it?
I wouldn't have been upset if he got a week, to be honest. It's just, it really, if he just dipped his dipped his head and put his shoulder into the bloke's chest, we wouldn't have been talking about it. And old mate's probably still out with 4 weeks because he's got shattered ribs. But it's a hard one because now you see a lot of, well, you see it pretty much every second set where the center jams in and tries to rush the ball player and gets up in his face and tries to make that ball an all tackle. They just have to sort of do whatever they can to shift their head out of a direct line with the opposition's head, realistically. So they put themselves in more danger by doing that. But yeah, it's a hard one.
Interesting. Actually, you mentioned Finucane. He had a head clash on the weekend, and I guess the only difference was he had the ball.
Yeah, he had two.
Otherwise, it would have been everywhere. Pretty similar situation.
Yeah, I can see merit on both sides of the argument, but if that's something that they're going to clamp down on, that you probably need to give blokes a week for that each time it happens. Unfortunate and circumstantial, but
it's funny because live when they called him over, I was waiting for him to be binned. I honestly thought he was being called over to be binned, and was half getting ready to blow up about the sin bin on it. But yeah,
and he did sort of hop off the ground as well. Both feet, which doesn't help.
Yeah. Anyway, the upshot is he's playing this week and Reece Walsh is out for a month. So speaking of Reece Walsh, he's just re-signed with Brisbane $5.5 million over 5 years. So well done him.
1.1, yeah.
Fair enough signing. Puts him in that sort of, Ponga bracket. Or a bit under Ponga, but that elite bracket.
Yeah, that elite bracket at the top there, that top. Two to 5% of the game, and over the last 12 months, he's probably earned that right too. So,
I agree. As I've said before, I think he should be the Australian fullback. Said that a number
ball
of times.
Ball in hand is dangerous as anyone, and really commands that attack from even with Reynolds there is the main linchpin for the attack of that Broncos team. So,
yeah. Let's get into that Broncos team. Anything else you want to touch on that you saw and caught your eye?
No, not particularly.
News, it's been a slowish news week, apart from, I guess, the Leichhardt Oval talk.
What can you say about a dilapidated stadium that probably should have been? They probably should have taken games away from there for a long time ago, to be honest. But if it's a one-off every now and then that's probably fine. But the Tigers really do need a marquee home ground, and they need, I don't know whether that's Campbelltown or so. If they could play out of Concord, it'd be perfect. They've got the Centre of Excellence there now, and if they could pour some money into that stadium and make it theirs, that would probably be brilliant for the club. But it's difficult.
I love Leichhardt Oval. It's been a couple of years since I've been there, mainly because for all the reasons that they've been made public, it's not the greatest ground to take kids to necessarily, just for the facilities and stuff like that, and.
55 bucks for GA is pretty rough. I didn't realise that
preposterous amount.
The GA price.
And throw $10, $12 beers on top. The pub's looking much cosier when you start getting up towards 150 bucks for a day out. Not mind you, it's not much cheaper at the pub these days.
And access to the ground is very limited.
I always think that, the case was made, given 10% of Penrith and 30 mil, they can at least try something, but I always, when you people that whinge about this old ground, plenty of Penrith fans did last year whinge about the changes coming to Bluebet. But when you go, and if you haven't been, if you go to a Combank or if you go to the North Queensland Stadium, the new stadium designs with the open concourses
Uncorp,
and
Allianz,
that sort of, Allianz, definitely Allianz. Suncorp's a little bit older compared, but
still
idea.
Set up better
same
than
idea,
a lot of
absolutely.
The suburban grounds.
It's chalk and cheese. And if you can get away from doing a 26,000 seat stadium in that league, you definitely should be trying to. Where Tigers actually head, I guess we'll wait and see. Probably ends up looking like it's going to be either Combank or, unless they try and do something with Campbelltown, but again, funding and whatever else.
Yeah.
Like, what else can we say that hasn't been said?
No, that's right. Know pretty much nothing about the financials and all those kind of numbers in and out and around those grounds, so probably not for us to talk about.
Exactly, but we can talk about Penrith beating Brisbane 34-12 Thursday night in front of 20,000 plus at Bluebet. Good crowds again all week. They jammed them into Allianz, jammed them into Christchurch, jammed them into Combank. And obviously, as we said, full house at Leichhardt. So fantastic start to the season, but has been a less fantastic start of the season for the Broncos. What did you, or the stats say, and off you go, Bart.
Yeah, we had 6 tries to 2, 5 out of 6 conversions for the Panthers, 1 out of 2 for the Broncos, 1 out of 1 penalty attempts for Brisbane, 22-2 at halftime, 87% completion, played 77%, 393-plus running metres and 154-plus post-contact metres for the Panthers, 7 line breaks to 4, 40 tackle busts to 30, 20 offloads to 7, 2 forced dropouts to 1, 316 tackles made by Penrith, 338 by Brisbane, 8 errors to 9, 7 penalties conceded to 4. A ruck infringement to 2, 2 inside the 10s against Penrith. Brian Toto with 124 Supercoach points, Cleary with 121, and Isaac Tago with 100. 10 minutes, but most games these days are pretty much that first 10 minutes are good back and forwards unless someone gets a break early. And the first 10 minutes of this one wasn't too bad, but then you cop an error, and then 10 seconds later you give Penrith a penalty and piggyback them down your own end, and within minutes it's Penrith's down the right side of the field and scoring in the corner.
On the back of losing Reece Walsh.
Yeah, obviously, yes. Yeah. Rob Walsh going off the field, which didn't help. But and then Penrith just defaults straight back to that pressure game. We're just going to kick, put you back into your corner of the field, make you work as hard as you can to get to the 40. And then on our second tackle, we're inside your 50, and we're just going to march downfield and keep doing what we do. Errors against Penrith are massive. They are the team that makes you pay for errors more than any other team in this competition.
Yep.
Whether it's just through absolute pressure and field position or out-and-out points. But every time you make an error against Penrith, you know you're going to be either defending for the next 5 minutes and scrambling for your life to save points, or they're going to put points on you. And it just happens every time you give Penrith an opportunity to do it. And that's what happened here. They just went straight back down the other end of the field and put points on them. And they just hurt you pretty much every time you make a mistake. You mentioned Walsh. To lose him, it absolutely killed their attack, and they looked confused every time they tried to shift the ball outside of a forward, taking a hit up through the middle. Didn't know how it was going to happen. Cobbo had some nice touches later in the game and got involved in the back line. And did look like he did a few nice things there. But it was a Nathan Cleary masterclass, let's be honest. As soon as they were down inside the 30, he was throwing dummies inside, outside, double dummies, double pumps, cut-out passes, short grubbers, inside, outside passes. And he just tore this Brisbane defensive line apart.
You mentioned you're spot on there. And I'll get Brisbane out of there very quickly because I don't have a great deal to talk about. We'll circle back around again when we're done. But the late comeback from them, there's probably just a couple of blokes I want to mention. You mentioned Cobbo. I thought Pierre Coulter was very good. And Mam tried as hard as he could have when he finally got some ball in that back end of the 20. Obviously, the damage being done. And Pat Carrigan was fantastic. He was the only one when the chips were real down real trying
oh, absolutely.
To get through and trying to do two or three blokes work through that middle of the field. So we won't spend a heap of time talking about poor old Brisbane, but I think this is as... Oh, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to make the point of as soon as Penrith find a weakness, and there was 2 second rows defending in the centres in this game.
Yes.
And it started on one side of the field, and that's where Penrith started. And then the second rower had to go in on the other side of the field, so then they went to the other side of the field. And you just saw Tago and Brian Toto just cash in big time.
And I was going to mention the earlier shifts, but you're spot on. And circumstances have allowed that, I think, every game for Penrith. They've just... they haven't won because they're lucky, but they've had some luck because the same thing happened to Parramatta, losing the winger in the first minute. All of a sudden, they effectively lost Cartwright for the game, and Tunga was able to do the same thing there. But you're right; they just once they get blood in the water, and we use that death by a thousand cuts in a deeper water analogy. But this is another example of it. They just go right. This is where they're in trouble, and just hammer. And lots of teams, for whatever reason, don't. I'm surprised how few teams. Yeah, surprised how few teams actually have what on paper looks like common sense. Sometimes you mentioned the offloads earlier. It feels like Penrith have made a concerted effort to do more of that through these first few weeks. Obviously, Yeo always does what he does, but he's popping a few more, and both back rowers feels like are making more of that effort. Those stats obviously become boosted when you've got May and Tungo out wide taking two blokes with them as well. But I would be shocked if you went back and looked through the last few years if they were ever pulling off 20-plus offloads a game in some of those early season games.
Yeah, it definitely seems like a directive that if the back rowers are held up to turn and look behind them at least, whether they throw it or not, different story. But, yeah, it definitely seems like there's a directive for them to look to push that second phase play.
You know, it's scary. In a comp where we prognosticated at the start of the year that almost every team potentially, including Penrith, looked weaker on paper, I don't think I've seen them play better at the start of the year, Penrith, than what they've done in the last couple of games. They are humming already. Play style is slightly different, but as you now think of it, it's probably a victim of circumstance in their benefit at times.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most opportunistic attacking teams that as soon as they find a mismatch on the field, they just hammer it for the next 20 minutes. Generally something good comes of it as well. So
no, they were fantastic. Always very easy to watch, obviously. Physical. They pinned Brisbane's forwards for a lot during the middle period, I felt.
Yep,
and then when you throw 300 metres, what was it, 300 from Edwards, 280 from 263 from 2-0, and then the other centres doing their part as well, you just never get on top of them.
Yep. Now, well, you mentioned the best Broncos were probably Cobbo and Carrington. There's only a couple others that I wanted to mention. I thought Madden had a decent game. I thought he got him around the field okay. Mariner, again, looked like he was a threat at different times. Obviously, didn't get a whole heap of opportunities, but did look threatening. And the sort of bit part forwards, I think, did a decent enough job. They weren't brilliant, but the likes of Willison, Hetherington and Jensen at times were decent enough in the middle of the field. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the only mentions I had out of the Brisbane team.
And what about the rest of Penrith? Like, as I mentioned, a couple that, but it's par for the course now, talking up what Edwards does, talking up what Tuo does.
It's just rinse and repeat every week, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think most of these guys are on that sort of rinse and repeat schedule. Lindsay Smith, I thought, had a very good game starting in the front row. He was very good. Martin and Kenny were good as well in the middle of the field. They made a decent contribution. Liam Henry, for a young fella, did a fair bit of work in the middle again. Someone that probably wouldn't have hit a lot of people's tip sheets this week. But then you get back to these guys and Edwards, Targo, Yo, Cleary. It was just, they just did what they've done for the last 3 years.
I thought it was Luai's best game as well. He didn't. Not that he had to do a great deal, but he, a few of the nice switches of play set up some of Cleary's play, and obviously he closed the game out
on a few more times.
Yeah, so warming into the season, but I don't think there's any dispute that Cleary's getting 3 points here, is he?
100%. And then I had Brian Toto for the two, and then probably Targo was a beneficiary in attack, but again, it was Isaiah Yeo setting up all the stuff in the middle. So they were the two that I had the discussion about.
Give it to Yeo because I just thought he was he's right now, he's just so good at getting him going. That second or third hit up, which sets up the rest of the set, is always his. Quick play.
He can read what's going on outside. And as soon as it's not on, he just buries his head and takes a hit up.
Yeah.
And then still looks for an offload. And yeah, it's just a whole heap of good stuff comes off the back of the work he does in the middle of the field.
100%. I don't have too much. I just
GT, if you're listening, can we get an updated round four? Because I really want to put it up against the list that I fucking saw today out of the Daly M's.
All right.
Can we get our points through round three compared to theirs, please, mate?
Yeah. All right. We'll read that out next week.
Because that was farcical, some of those names on that list. But anyway,
I don't whinge about Daly M's because everyone should know what they are. We know what they are.
I just want to put them up side by side.
Yeah,
we'll
put a graphic up on social media actually as well. That's a good call. Yeah. But the whole reason we started the Daly M's is for that reason.
Exactly.
But, you can't fall if your seat's shocked when there's judges that openly admit they don't watch the whole game. So what are you supposed to comment further on that? Brisbane, they're now carrying no Haas, no Walsh. Reynolds named. I'd be full of confidence seeing play, but they're heading up to North Queensland. Then they're going to, they're hosting North Queensland. Then they've got the Storm, the Dolphins, the Raiders, the Tigers, the Roosters next 5 or 6 weeks. It's not a tricky draw without all guns on deck. I mean, it is a tricky draw for all guns on deck, I should say. Not an easy draw.
Yeah, and a million questions to be asked with the likes of the team lists that are going to be named over the next couple of weeks. Piacora apparently injured today as well.
Yeah.
Ankle sprain, so. Yeah.
Yeah. Concerning is all I guess we can finish on.
Absolutely. It looks like they may have a significant hurdle to get overcome round 8 or 9.
We'll see where that heads. We then got to Friday night, 6 p.m., where the Warriors hosted the Raiders in a very physical game. Both teams are up for this, but what did the stats say?
Yeah, fantastic game to watch, especially if you like the physical altercation in the middle of the field. 3 tries to 2, 3 out of 3 conversions played, 1 out of 2 for Canberra. 6-4 at halftime towards the Warriors, 79% completion played, 80%, 120-plus running meters and 78-plus. Sorry, 120-plus running metres for Warriors, but 78-plus post-contact metres for Canberra.
Mm.
6 line breaks to 4, 29 tackle busts to 30, 6 offloads to Canberra, 1 forced dropout from the Warriors, 394 tackles played, 348, 13 errors to 9, 4 penalties conceded to 6, 1 ruck infringement from both teams. Jordan Rapana with 93 Supercoach points, Tomoko with 91, and RTS with 79.
I would argue for probably 55 minutes, Raiders were the better team. And Warriors held on very well and just blew out that last 15, 20. Once they sort of bobbed their head in front, it felt like that was it. But Warriors did really well to hang on in the meantime. I wouldn't say there's too much between these two teams.
Not a huge amount. The issue with Canberra, they're playing fantastic football. They just rely a little bit on individual efforts for points, whether it's a kick and a bloke to jump over the top and grab it, or Tomoko to break a tackle and score, and you know, or Rapana to get in behind the line and set somebody up. There's not a consistent sort of ball playing line where they put points on out the back.
That's exactly what we said in season preview. If you had to tell me what Canberra's attack style is, short of physical and follow the forwards, there's not one that comes to mind beyond hoping
Frogarty,
yes,
you know, obviously trying to isolate jumpers on shorter people, really strong through the middle where they're hoping to compress the defense, and generally fast ball movement to get around them. You
trying
don't
to
see
isolate
lots
Tomoko
of
on someone,
yeah, or a one-on-one with the centers. They're ticking every box at the moment. They probably just dropped away fractionally at the back end of this game, but it was a really good, strong, rough and tumble start to this game. The Warriors started well, and they scored, and I thought they were going to go skip away to a pretty sizable lead at the start of this game. But the Raiders really defended really well in the middle and the edges. There was some really nice scramble and cover play to get across and shut down movements on the outside edges. And that comes obviously back to your commitment in your defense. And they've probably got one of the better defensive structures once the ball does get wide. They really, their forwards lock into an edge. They take up that position where the halfback is, and then everyone goes to the corner. You know, so it's going to take a lot to get back and in through the middle, and it really condenses the outside edges, which makes it hard to get one-on-ones and that kind of stuff on the edges. So,
which is a far cry from where it's got to be some credit to Webster, because how bad were those same edges 2.5 years ago?
Yeah, 100%. But their scramble under pressure from Canberra was brilliant. And then they got in front and they looked like they had the running for, as you mentioned, probably 50 minutes out of an 80-minute match. Rapana was doing some really nice things, chiming in at fullback and creating one-on-ones for the likes of Tomoko and Hopewade, which led to some points. The Warriors, for mine, just seem to have that one or two extra attacking options, where whether it be, you know, the short kick back through the middle and a little bit of extra pace to get on the ball, or the sweeping play where you've got two blokes that are really good at a one-on-one rather than just the one. And
plus the start of that sweeping play is all their forwards have footwork. Even your Barnetts of the world, your Barnetts and forwards are as good as anyone with footwork in the line. And so if there's a change of direction, similar to the first try, I suppose, it creates dangers both ways, whereas Canberra don't play for that.
They were in front and looking really good until the sort of the last 15 minutes. And I think they fatigued, to be honest. I think they just, the pressure through the middle of the field really condensed. They started looking to cover the inside of the field, which left the edges a little bit bare. And that's sort of where they got stripped a little bit towards the back end of the game. You throw in some brilliant efforts off, you know, the likes of RTS and Dallin Vuitenne Zalesniak that really, you know, created heaps of problems at times for the Raiders out wide. But they could have and probably should have won this game.
Yeah. And really got beaten by two. Well, we talked about Canberra's individual, but there's two individual efforts that got Warriors home at the end of the day when it's all said and done. RTS burrowing through, producing, I guess, what we've been waiting for a couple of weeks. And Dallin's big switcher play back to hit Metcalf
back through the middle of the field. Yep.
So
that one was one of the ones that I was saying that they seemed to clock off a little bit, whereas they compressed the middle and then all slid to one edge, and Dallin was able to cut back through the middle. And you know, I think that was more of a fatigue factor than anything. And RTS, that was just, as you said, a beautiful one on one. He skipped on the outside of one and pushed two of them off and carried another one over the line, which that's just what class players do. So
really low. As I do every week, Tohu Harris's ball playing was fantastic in this game. Very, but no shock there. And he's become one of my favourite players, if you haven't noticed. Jackson Ford, I thought he was great again. Just picks the right time to run. If he's a touch shade quicker, nearly gets a first try for me to start us off. But both him and Barnett, as I said, they get into the line and just great at hitting the right shoulder and making the Johnson look good.
Thought Hudson Young had a pretty good game, and Whitehead was decent on his return. Hosking did a very good job coming off the bench. I don't know whether they think there's a more explosive option with Hosking coming off the bench, but I just think it's time to let the kid just take over and do the minutes and work, because he probably does a little bit better work than Whitehead, to be honest, if you're going to be playing big minutes.
Well, this stage of the game he does.
Tarpanay was very strong, and him and Hosking were probably Canberra's best forwards. Tomoko, Fogarty were very good again, and they looked like the two big go-tos for their attack.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned already, Rapana was their best. He was chiming in very well from the back. Ball playing, he's probably got he got caught out once or twice with his defensive positioning, but that happens to most fullbacks in the competition, to be honest. But, he was brilliant, ball in hand, running at the line and setting up his outside backs. I thought Tuapiki was really good for the Warriors at fullback until he copped his HIA. He would have had massive points for Super Coach and all the stats if he'd stayed on for that whole game.
I'd almost go as far, and I know, you know, and I made the joke at the time, it's a shame they didn't have a world-class fullback to go back and cover for him, but he felt like he was just about to really tear that middle of the field apart. He was just starting to get the fatigue.
Skipping around in the middle of the field and just felt brushing like brushing past a few of them.
Yeah, there was something coming from him. And if he stays on, potentially they do win by a shade more. But
maybe a bit more, I thought Tavanga was very strong off the bench.
Yes.
Very good.
He's been outstanding, Tavanga. He really has been all year.
You mentioned Barnett and Ford. They were really good. The halves did a decent job. And it was Tohu Harrison, Fanua Blake that were probably the best two players on the field for the Warriors. They were fantastic. Outside of RTS, who obviously looks like he pretty much won that game off his own bat, didn't he? When they needed points, he was the one who did it. So, but without Tohu Harris making 50 odd tackles and 140 run meters and all the rest of the work that he did in the middle of the field, they don't get close to winning this game. So I had him as my man of the match.
I will never argue with you about that. So you keep going.
Rapana with 2 points, and then toss up between Johnson or Fanua Blake. But I think Fanua Blake probably had more impact.
Yeah, go Fanua Blake. They don't. Well, as you said, I know RTS won them the game, but they don't get close to win this game without those other two. So
no, 100%.
I'd agree with that. Just a quick thought on Morgan Smithies. We've now seen him for a month. Obviously, he does a mountain of the work through the middle there, but I wouldn't call him an attacking weapon.
No, but I do think he'll be. I've got a funny feeling Horsburgh will come off the bench
Yeah.
Just because he's so explosive. Like, just wind him up and let him start knocking blokes over. You know what I mean? And leave Smithies out there for an hour. Horsburgh can come on to an edge after 20 minutes and go mental for half an hour and then move him back to the back into 13, and Smithies can have a rest.
Yeah.
The last 20 minutes of the game or something like that. But I think he's like your soaker pad in the middle of the field that just soaks up all that energy and effort.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's able to just take tackle after tackle. And, you know, he's got a little bit of ball playing. He's got a nice sort of right to left short pass. Mm-hmm. But you don't see a lot of offloading.
Well, and, that's about all I've seen from him.
At the line and stuff.
Is that short pass? But maybe that's what he's been told to do.
But I think, you know, you can play Horsburgh in the front row. You can play him at the lock, or you can play him in the second row. He can play any position in that forward pack. So for mine, I think Smithy's probably still holds on to 50 minutes to an hour of most games and just absorbs all that energy.
Yeah, not in any way suggesting he doesn't start, and as you, maybe that's the key to getting that rotation right more than anything.
Yeah.
Just a couple of times.
And Horsburgh were named on the extended bench this week, so don't be surprised if you do see him come back this week.
It's more, I wouldn't say the attack stops, but it feels like it. When you get through that sort of late first half spot, couple of times.
You're not getting fast shifts out of the lock position, or you're not getting defenses drawn in.
Yeah.
It's just a catch and pass sort of thing.
Yeah. Let's get to the other one where Rabbitohs would love to do a bit more catching and passing because they got beat 48-6 at Allianz in front of 37,500.
Catching and scoring.
Catching and scoring is probably the key. Yes, that's right. What did the stats say here?
8 tries to 1, 8 out of 8 conversions for the Roosters, 1 out of 1 for the Rabbitohs. Sin bin for South again. I think they've had a sin bin every week, haven't they? Since the start of the comp, but anyway.
Yep. Yeah, Cookie was unlucky. Latrell.
18-0 at halftime. 86% completion, played 70%. 149-plus running metres and 70-plus post-contact metres for the Roosters. 7 line breaks to 4, 36 tackle busts to 30, 11 offloads to 8. 360-plus kicking metres as well for the Roosters on top of all the rest of that.
That's crazy.
2 forced dropouts to 1, 317 tackles played, 320, 10 errors to 15, 5 penalties apiece, 3 ruck infringements against the Roosters, 1 against the South Sydney, 2 inside the 10 against the Roosters. Dominic Young with 150 Supercoach points, Tedesco with 135, and Kulamatungi with 98.
We're going to start just quickly. We might start here. We might start with Dean Hawkins. But when you are out-meted by the forwards and then lose by a couple hundred metres in the kicking as well, it doesn't really suggest he's saving them with a Mitch Moses style boot, is he?
They went away from him most of the night. They used him as a runner.
The next question, I'd probably meant to save this for a bit later in chat, but why bring him in at all if nothing's going to change? There was no change of play style. There's nothing different to what Ilias has been doing.
It was probably a little bit slower, to be honest, than what Ilias has been doing. At least Ilias has been sort of rushing into the defence and taking a guy with him. It hasn't been overly effective, but at least it's, you know, been up-tempo, whereas Hawkins seemed very deliberate and a little bit slow compared to Ilias.
Yeah. No, he's finding his feet very early in his career, but
The bloke's played almost 100 reserve grade games. So.
That's true. I think it goes to show, and he's been player of the year last couple of years in reserve grade, and I saw that Hastings and Ilias carved up reserve grade for more reports.
Yep.
But there is a significant, let's not pretend there's not a significant step between first grade and reserve grade as well.
Oh, no, 100%. Especially with your playmakers and mobile back rowers and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little bit easier if all your job is to run in and, you know, take hit ups and make a few tackles. But when you're trying to organise sides and become, you know, the attacking linchpin of a side, it's pretty difficult.
How about the rest of this, though?
It's completely not helped by his partner in crime. Mm. If you look on the other side of the field, one team lost their 5'8", and their halfback played tremendously, and one team lost their halfback, and their 5'8" fucking went and sat in the stands and did sweet fuck all for the majority of the game. So,
correct. The question had. Isn't it funny they've come out this year, 6 months after the 4 big names all re-signed for a long-term Big yep. money deal. Funny that, eh? Anyway, we
This was the start of about four games in a row where one side of the field just completely forgot how to fucking tackle.
Yeah.
There was like one bloke out there in Cameron Murray who was making good – three. It's always Cook, it's always Murray, and it's always Koolamatungi. They're yeah. quite good in defence. The rest of them had no idea what they were doing, where they were meant to be, how they were meant to make tackles. And, yeah, their defensive line just looked atrocious at times. They didn't know what they were doing. Some blokes were rushing, some blokes were sliding, some blokes were backing off, and they had no idea how to make a one-on-one tackle. Like yeah. they just got brushed off consistently by the outside backs of the Roosters side. It was completely dead by the end of this game. Like there was no life left in that defensive line whatsoever. They were just not interested in trying to make tackles by the end of this game.
I think it's telling how often, and you know, their answer to this problem was Sean Kepi apparently, but how often teams score under the post against South?
Yes,
and this game, there was a couple of times where they'd have one crash play and go, oh, you know, we'll just do the same play again. And we'll
angle back. And just put a little bit of angle on this one.
Yeah. And they'll score the next tackle. Or in one case, it was James Tedesco. But I always just feel like that's when that's really soft, it speaks to the rest of the attitude across the team.
Yeah, 100%. No, you're absolutely correct there. Really big call from the Roosters' first hit up of the game for to use your captain's challenge.
Hey.
And they got it right. And they got the ball down the field, but it's a ballsy call. Every bounce of the ball did seem to go the Roosters' way, to be fair. Like every time it was rolling around on the ground, it landed up in a Rooster's hand. Whenever it bounced a certain direction, it just seemed to bounce towards a yeah. Rooster. And that happens, especially when you've just got the momentum going. But they were the stronger team by far in pretty much every position of the field. Really direct, which we did allude to with Keary going out of the team. We just thought that obviously Walker would double down with how direct he is, and that brings Teddy into the game a little bit more instead of waiting for Keary to sort of make a decision and then him having to react to Keary. He was just straight off the first receiver and reacting from there. And let's face it, he played a bit of six and he looked pretty good.
It's got to be said, it's not a coincidence that his best games in the last 2 years have been by himself, essentially.
Yeah, 100%. Again, the little kick for himself and some nice dummying and running and looked very good. Santa Smith didn't really miss a beat, just got in there and did what he needed to do. He's got a nice kick across the field, which is another one of the weapons that the Roosters have here with their massive wingers out there. But
a couple of nice kicks. He had the soccer kick for a try. I think he set up the other one off the kick, didn't he?
But their passing for mine was the big one. It was quick. It was decisive. It wasn't the sort of the ball being held and waiting for something to happen out wide. It was just, if we're going wide, it was straight across the back line. If we're going back towards the post, it was a short pass and Teddy was going back towards the post. And the decisions just seemed to come a lot quicker without Keary in the back line. So we'll see what happens here with him coming back in this week. Like, there's no doubt that he's a fantastic footballer, but for mine in the last 12 months, his decision-making's been questionable.
So. Yes. And how much clean early ball it allowed Young to get, which... When he does get half outside someone, he's making 40 metres upfield for him, if not.
Yeah, that's right. If otherwise, he's running the length of the field and scoring.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've got to let your weapons get time one-on-one with their opposition or even, half on their outside when they're getting the ball. And those outside backs can do a lot of damage. So,
absolutely. Teddy continues to go strength to strength this year. Just absolute peak form. Benefited from the direct play, as we said, from Walker, just popping up in the right spot, simplifying his game, I think, just trying to, not trying to overplay it, just being there for that crash play or being there for the, for that supports role, which is what brought him to the dance.
Yep, and it seemed a very clear, Cheese seemed to have a little more direction with his passing as well. Mm-hmm. Like, they looked like they'd come out and said, we're having three through the middle and then we're going to the backs. Like, every set, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So he knew the first three were short balls to forwards, and then he was looking for Walker. And there was no, you know, or Smith either side of the field. And, yeah, there was just the decision-making seemed a lot more crisp this week than what I've seen out of the Roosters so far this year. So
I wonder if it's just as simple as simplifying it.
Yeah, absolutely. Saying, yeah, it makes it a lot easier. Yeah.
We're going, yeah, as you said, A, B, C, then D. Yeah. If everyone does it right, we're good enough.
And they did for the majority of this game. They were helped by South's defence, but yeah, what do you say? There's never really any attack that got going from South Sydney at all, realistically.
No.
Hawkins shaded Walker by a mile and had an okay debut, but as I said, looked a little bit slow. Totola did a decent job in the middle with Host and Cook, but it was Murray and Kulamatangi that were the two standouts for South Sydney. Mm. There was really no one else.
We've heard that one before, haven't we?
Yeah, a couple of times over the last few years. excuse me, they had there wasn't a bad Rooster on the field, I didn't think. I thought all of them had a very good game. So it made it a little bit harder to sort of stand out anyone over anyone else. But, yeah, Cheese, as I mentioned, Brandon Smith, Butcher and Radley were really good in the middle of the field. Sam Walker had a fantastic game, as did Manu and Terrell May. And then, yeah, Young and Teddy were the ones that just absolutely tore the defensive line apart and put points on.
How long was he in the field? I thought Connor Watson just added a nice blend for their attack as well without anything too crazy. But as you said, everyone just played their part more than anything in this game. But I agree with you. Yeah, let's go 3 Teddy, 2 to Young, 1 to Walker.
Yep.
It's Sam Walker.
Kulamatangi's pretty hard done by there. Had put 40. In a massive shift for the for the South Sydney side. But yeah, give it to Walker.
And Sam Walker was on the way to tonning up in Supercoach, I think, until he got knocked out. I think he was nearly 60, but he would have definitely had an involvement in one or two more tries.
He would have thought so.
If not, have found another one or two himself. But all by the by. Saturday afternoon kicked off at Belmore. 32-0 Bulldogs over the Titans. What did the stats say for this barn burner?
6 tries for the Dogs, 4 out of 6 conversions for the Dogs. 12-0 at halftime, 80% completion, played 77%, 507 plus running meters for the Bulldogs and 80 post contact meters more than the Titans. 8 line breaks to 1, 42 tackle busts, played 23, 9 offloads to 4, 2 forced dropouts to 0, 334 tackles made by the Bulldogs, 372 made by the Titans. 10 errors to 12, 9 penalties against the Dogs, 3 against the Titans. 3 ruck infringements against the Titans, 3 inside the 10 to the Dogs, 2 against the Titans. Jacob Kiraz with 115 Supercoach points, Reid Marnie with 96, Connor Tracy with 86. And then you had 5 other Bulldogs players before you got to the lonely Titan, which was Beau Fillmore on 56 Supercoach points.
Good for him. Just to be that guy, how much would the Dogs have won by had Toby Sexton been playing?
Maybe another try. I don't think it would have been a huge difference, to be honest.
I watched this game, more the first half, they came better. I watched this first half and thought they were very average in attack, the Bulldogs.
Yep.
I don't think they just play without halves. They don't have halves. And I thought Reid Marnie wasn't very good in the first half for a bloke whose second half was good. And he got going and he was running more. I think he even got a try somewhere through the back. They were pretty close to one, but I thought his service was average in the first half, and they just never really felt like they had all the ball, they had all the field possession, but they were just waiting for one of their outside backs to do something more than...
And that was the story of the game. It was Kiraz and Tracy carving up out wide, causing problems out there.
But that's how it felt to me, and I don't necessarily start a negative for a team of 1 by 30, but I just didn't think they were that impressive given the opportunities they had. And what was possession? Sorry, you mentioned that.
80% to 77%, so
completion
evened up. That's completion rate. Right? Yeah. You got the minutes.
56-44 in terms of ball in hand possession. Sorry, I'll let you talk now because people will probably think I'm being harsh on them.
No. I think it was pretty fair. Again, they came with the attitude, which they've brought every game.
And
I'm not
knocking their attitude, by the way. No, definitely.
Which is massive for, obviously, a team that, as you mentioned, don't have the stars in the back line. even though some of these guys are fantastic players, the linkage between the middle of the field and the outside backs does seem clunky at times and a little bit slow, but their attitude was brilliant. I think we got our answer on the Titans, which we asked last week, whether if it looks like they're no good or they're just no good. It definitely looks like they're not good at all.
Well, they're not going to get better without Tino, are they?
You wouldn't think so. Obviously, Fifita and Campbell add something, but Fifita out hurts. Very good, tough attitude. The defensive line speed seemed a little bit up in this game as well.
Yeah.
Seemed like they'd made a point of getting up in the face of the Titans and really using line speed to rattle their attack, which is, they've got nothing in attack, let's be honest. They've scored one try in two matches. So they're crying out for the likes of Fifita and Campbell to come back to add a little bit of attack to this team. But, the up and in
and
defense
that's a team
from the Dogs,
that averaged
I thought was good.
26 points a game last year.
Yeah.
And has the same team.
What's changed?
The coach. No Holbrook.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
The best bomb try of the season. Like, I don't think you'll see a better one. Seriously, I know you had $20 on AJ or whatever it was. You would have made yourself a tidy little investment there. But the bloke's over the line and dead set passes it into the face of his halfback.
All he had to do was fall over for me to make $500.
And instead of just like, he could have just put it on his chest and he just passed it into his face. How good is that?
Oh, yeah, it was heaps good. The best thing was they'd kick our first try as well and he scored second. So it was just a night out for me.
Sounds about right.
Anyway, go on.
The defensive line for the Titans has been the story of it. And everyone, you know, he's meant to be fantastic defensive coach, but their defensive line is slow and it's unorganized. It seems like they're happy to just jog up in a line and then stand there and wait for the opposition to do something.
Mm.
They don't sort of, they get within a couple of meters of the attacking line and then stand there.
Yeah.
Doing that, it's just asking for your opposition outside backs to get one-on-ones and just cause all sorts of problems.
When you see teams like that, and there's the same a little bit the Tigers last week, as I mentioned, I wonder how much that is because that's the intensity their opposed sessions work at and they don't.
Quite possibly.
Like they just live in their own little land and don't realise you've got to actually play a level above that.
But as soon as the ball gets outside someone or there's a change of angle, their defensive line's completely shot.
No.
They don't seem to know what decision to make and the bloke standing next to the two blokes standing next to each other never make the same decision.
No.
It's always the opposite. One goes up, one goes back. One goes left, one goes right. And then there's just fucking holes everywhere in that defensive line. And it just absolutely turned into chaos when the Dogs started turning blokes back under or getting on the outside with a bit of pace and the likes of Tracy and Karaz. And it was all over pretty early in this game.
100%. Connor Tracy was fantastic out in the wing there. Got involved, went looking for work. Nothing we don't expect from him. But as you said, you mentioned Karaz as well. I thought Blake Wilson, just as good a finisher as anyone's got at the moment. And Taff worked into the game really once he got a chance to get more involved and play a little bit more direct.
Took him a while to get going.
Well, yeah. I think a little bit of that's to do with Reed. And once they sort of worked it out, just play through the middle.
Yeah, possibly.
I thought he looked better. Who else do I want to talk about here? I don't even know.
I only had, four Titans that I thought were worth mentioning. I thought Randall and Jolliffe worked pretty hard in the middle of the field, did a fair bit of work. And Fermor and Verrills were decent as well. But they're probably the only four that were worth mentioning there. The second row for the Bulldogs were really strong. Ball in hand again, Preston and Kikau, they caused all sorts of problems when given the ball, running those strong, hard lines on the edges. And you already mentioned Tracy and Kiraz. They were the best two players on the field. And by the time Reed warmed into the game, and he did a fair bit of work early in the first half with his defence and then really warmed into the game, getting the ball out wide with some cutout passes and stuff at the back end of the game. Mm. So they were probably my 3-2-1. Kiraz 3, Tracy 2, and Reed with the 1.
I was going to throw Kikau or Preston in for 1, but...
Yeah, I'm happy to take any of them.
Go Kikau 1. Yeah. I think he started the season really well, actually. I think he looks motivated. Absolutely. He's fit and getting involved, which is good. Where do we go next? 46-24, the Dragons. Oh, you know, quick break. Mm-hmm. 46-24, the Cowboys survived a brief scare from the Dragons Saturday evening, but ultimately, well, blew them off the park, let's be honest. But how'd the stats look on this one?
Yeah, so we had 4 tries to the Dragons, 8 tries to the Cowboys. 4 out of 4 conversions, played 7 out of 8. 18-22 at halftime. 81% completion, played 86%. 517 plus run meters and 145 plus post contact meters for the Cowboys. 5 line breaks to 7. 26 tackle busts, played 31. 11 offloads to 6. 1 forced dropout to 2. 40-20 from the Cowboys. 361 tackles played, 275. 10 errors to 8. 4 penalties conceded to 7. A ruck infringement against the Dragons and an inside at the 10 against the Cowboys. Valentine Holmes with 144 Supercoach points. Drinkwater with 105. And Zach Lomax with 98.
Yeah, first 20 minutes. I guess we all thought, oh, look out. Maybe the Dragons just had a bad week last week. But then anyone had a bad week this week too. Didn't last
the very start of the match. I thought the Cowboys probably came out a little bit quicker than the Dragons and were on top for the first sort of 5 or 10 minutes, and obviously scored the first try with the lovely cutout. But definitely swung back to the Dragons for the next sort of half an hour, and they were very, you know, the Cowboys seemed to slow down a little bit in their defensive pressure, and the Dragons seemed to really get on top. Especially in the middle of the field, which is a bit of a surprise there for a bit in that first half. Is that the way you saw it, or?
Pretty much, yeah. I think the worst thing that the last 5 minutes of the first half, I think, just put the Dragons to bed. I think they were in their game up until then, and that last try happened, I think that was it. But I felt the same. I thought Dragons looked quite scary for someone like me who was on a perfect round. Yeah, I thought we're in trouble here, because I thought they were out-enthused them for most of that time, and would almost say clearly on top, and then it just ended. I think once Neem got over, and then that there was the second try, just really took the wind out of the sails, and I don't think the second half was an event, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the Cowboys seemed to relax after that first try, and as you said, the Dragons were sort of pouring through the middle there at different stages, and then the defensive line speed from the Cowboys, because the outside edges seemed to be moving faster than the middle did, and then as soon as the ball got outside the second rowers for the Dragons, the Cowboys were forced into making decisions, and generally they were trying to jam, which you saw Holmes get exposed twice, which led directly to points for the Cowboys. For the Dragons. And he got exposed pretty badly, realistically, like got beaten by probably a player, maybe two players on his outside trying to jam in. And the Dragons were doing it quite well. They had some nice shape to what they were doing. The dummy from Flanagan, for me, seemed to be the turning point. Like when he dummied and went and scored on his own next to the post, there just seemed to be a massive shift from the Cowboys to, oi, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
We need to get something going here and get something about us. And then they really started to up the ante back through the middle of the field, and it came off Reece Robson from mine. I thought he was brilliant for that 15-minute period either side of that first half. And if he's not on the field, I don't think they win this game. I think he was really getting out, pressuring the markers and bringing his forwards onto the ball, which led to heaps of run meters through the middle of the field in that 15-minute period at either time or half time. Sets up 2 tries going into the half, and then obviously the Cowboys are in front. And the Dragons, when they drop their head, they just completely lose their bundle. You don't see it so much. They still try to attack. The ball gets moved to the sides of the field. Hunt's kicking game is generally pretty good, but their defensive structure just goes out the window when they drop their head. And
Ben Hunt said as much. Said he had no way to get them back going again once they had spat the dummy.
Because, you just start conceding points every 5 to 10 minutes, and what can you do? It doesn't matter how good you go, you know, in attack. You can't concede points on that regular basis as they were that sort of 20-minute period either side of half time.
We've been waiting for Drinkwater to turn up, and he turned up the second half here. He was very good.
Yeah, some really nice cutout passes. He just hits the halve line, like sort of runs the out ball towards the halves and then throws that double cutout and hits the winger and or hits the center. And yeah, it's fun. It's really good to watch. He played a nice little touch ball as well to the Holmes, which was sort of a half cutout, which put him over as well. But yeah, some really nice ball playing from Drinkwater in this one to get him set up for points.
And their halves looked good again. Townsend Dearden still playing direct, still looking as good as he has all year.
Did a little more kicking, I think, too. Just off the top of my head, I didn't actually look at the stats, but it felt like he took a little bit more kicking on this one.
And I feel like you've covered off the Dragons players worth mentioning. Lomax, beneficiary of some of that stuff out wide, as was Sloan. They've had really good starts to the season. They both look to be in really good form. Just need a few more to go with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Maskey was okay for his. Yeah. I think that was his debut, was it? Or unless he played a game last year.
But
he looked okay at hooker. Michael Molo, again, he seems to get through his work, but without being, you know, occasionally he stands out, but he's generally just gets through his work. Did a decent job there. Eisenhuth has been actually quite good for them this year. Just as that continual worker in the middle of the field, and Blake Laurie was pretty good as well. Leilua scoring a try at the end of the game helped bring a bit of respectability back into the points, but he was Lomax, okay without
he was there.
No, it was Leilua from a grubber, wasn't it? Right. He should have scored.
Yeah, he watched it.
He let Lomax take it.
Yeah.
He should have just fucking dived in front of him and scored. But their halves were okay, especially in the first half, but second half they got bashed out of it. Jack DeBellin again did a heap of work. He's one of their best players week in, week out. Cotto, Nanai, Neem were all very good in the middle of the field. They were the big guys that came into the middle of the field and caused problems on the back of Robson when they were up and going through the middle of the field. You mentioned Dearden. Chad was probably a fraction better than him again this week. It's 2 weeks in a row. But Robson, Drinkwater and Val Holmes were fantastic. And they were the linchpins in getting all the points. So
yeah. Just touching on Griffin Neem, I think he's come back fantastically this year. Good bit of size. He's good for us. Did you get a try in this game? He was there. He was around one. He got the kick. One off the kick, I think. One off the Robson dart. But I think he's just nearly 180 meters here. Heaps more than anyone else on either side of the field in the forward packs. So I think he's come back in great order. To your point about the 3-2-1s, though, I'm happy to follow you in there. Let's go with, I had Drinkwater 3, Val 2, but if you're going to elevate Robson, we can do that.
Yeah, so for mine, I think if Robson isn't on the field for that 20-minute period, either time of halftime, the Cowboys don't get back in this game. I think it ends up 22-6 at halftime, maybe 22-12, and that's a big bridge to build in that second half. I know that they ran away with it late in the game, but I think Robson was instrumental in getting the Cowboys back into this game. So I had him with 3 points, Drinkwater with 2, and Val Holmes with 1.
No, fair enough. We said the same about the Warriors, so let's go with that. And then we got to...
Just quickly, 19 minutes ago, as of the locker room, Walshy07 has put up a post saying, "Don't believe everything you read. No deal has been signed."
Okay.
So obviously similar with what happened with Luai, but doesn't mean Walsh will stay there or not. But yeah.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a contract in front of him and he's probably expected to sign it. But as of now, nothing's been signed. So.
I wonder if there's another, and we don't know, obviously, it's all speculation. I wonder if there's another party involved.
Suitor.
Yeah, suitor, for lack of a better word. Interested to know who it might be. I'm also still, my Lomax prediction, I'm semi-bullish on it at the moment, I reckon. Richo came out and said that anyone, this has nothing to do with Lomax, but anyone they now deal with in negotiations, if the media finds out, they'll pull the deal straight away. So they're trying to, obviously, heavy on confidentiality. So interesting to see what happens there in recruitment land. They're chasing an outside back, so we'll see where that heads. Let's get to 32-6 from Leichhardt Oval. The Strikers over the Sharks. And
just trying to hide my tears.
Yes, I was most magnanimous on Saturday evening, as Barney is aware. When you win 10 games in, what, 3 years? Got to enjoy them sometime. But they were good. They were good. And when we talked about and Cops and Flack for mentioning it, we think the Tigers might have found the right track. This is, I think, what I was, had in mind. But easy to say after one win, you can do some stats first.
5 tries to 1, 5 out of 5 conversions played, 1 out of 1 for the Sharks. A penalty attempt converted by the Tigers was 18-6 at halftime. 86% completion by the Tigers, 67% from the Sharks. 277-plus running metres and 119-plus post-contact metres from the Tigers. 4 line breaks apiece, 38 tackle busts apiece. 15 offloads from the Tigers, 7 from the Sharks. 2 forced dropouts from Cronulla, end of 40-20. 325 tackles played, 355. 6 errors made by West Tigers, 16 made by Cronulla Sharks. 2 penalties conceded to 5, 1 ruck infringement to 3, 1 inside the 10 against the Tigers. Coruscant with 105 Supercoach points, Hazelton with 90, and Ollam with 84.
All right, well, put it all in perspective. How bad were the Sharks in fairness?
Pretty ordinary, and I'll get to that a couple of lines down in my notes here, but first 15 minutes, pretty decent back and forth. Sharks with the slight edge, and then the barge over from Hazelton under the post there. And it looked like it might be a long night for the Tigers. Sharks not flying on top, but looking pretty comfortable there for the first 10 or 15 minutes. And then the mistakes just started left, right, and center. Every time they tried to spread the ball, they dropped it. Every time they tried to go through the middle, they were giving away. Every time the Tigers went through the middle, they were giving away ruck infringements. They were giving away penalties. And their marquee defense and A and B defenders, so one on either side of the ruck, was fucking horrendous. They did not seem to know which way they were going. Some were moving up, some were stopping, some were standing there. And Appy Coruscant made absolute mincemeat out of that defense from the Sharks. He was the be-all and end-all for their attack. You didn't see, like, they defended pretty well out wide, the Sharks, to be honest. They shut down a couple of nice movements when the ball did get wide. But through the middle of the field, they got absolutely massacred. You look at pretty much every highlight, you had Appy's head floating around somewhere, beating a defender, and then it was either an offload or a lovely short pass before or after the line. And Ollam was a major beneficiary of it. He probably should have scored one himself, except for the Kennedy slapped it out of his hand at the very last second. Short balls to Seyfarth, balls in behind defenders to get to Ollam to score tries, setting, you know, getting defenders just standing on their heels, looking at him going, what the fuck is Appy about to do? Like, you have to obviously put it down to some brilliance out of Coruscant, but that was some of the worst middle defense I've seen from the Sharks for years. Like, it was horrible.
They're funny, the Sharks. I don't think, when you mentioned the errors, I don't know if there's a team that is more contagious. Once they start dropping it, it seems to spread through their team more than most.
It was contained to a few of them. Like, it was Trindle was doing it, Hines was doing it, and then because they prefer the edge with Talakai and Mulitalo, but I think Mulitalo made 3 or 4 errors as well. So,
Those outside backs never really got in the game, apart from trying to slug it out of their own half for the last 40 minutes. The best thing I can say about the Tigers is everyone just did their job, I felt. Everyone
got through the work really well.
They talked afterwards about how trying to simplify what people are doing, and it shone through here. Forward packs had a great base. Stefano was fantastic. His second stint especially was very good. I thought starting Pole was great. And Seyfarth made up for last week when we had such high hopes, but he got through a mountain of work. As you mentioned, got a lovely crash play.
And I sold him.
By necessity, had to keep him, but I didn't play him.
I held him for the bye, and then one bad game and I dropped him. Going against everything, the only reason I bought him. But anyhow.
But yes, it was the Appy Coruscant show. He was phenomenal. A how good he was in this game. And flattered or not, he was made the right call more often or not.
90% of the time. He was all over it. He had him on his back and he took him with him. Galvin chimed in very nicely, setting up some work in and around the edges of the ruck. The Sharks lost all their confidence with the first kick out and the full from Nico Hines. And then 10 minutes later, like he goes and does the same thing again.
You just feel like once he got it wrong, it was almost like everyone else just went, oh, shit. Well, if he's not with
what's going on now?
What are we doing now?
He's having a shocker. Fuck. Yeah. Why don't we all just have a shocker together? They weren't horribly bad. The defense in the middle of the field was horrible. But, working out of their own end and doing the fundamentals on, through the back rows and stuff wasn't horribly bad. And the Tigers did quite a good job to shut them down at times when they did have opportunities. But their attitude was definitely nowhere near what the Tigers brought to this game.
And that was it. That was the biggest difference. Olam, fantastic club debut. Put a couple of blokes on their asses early.
Smoked them, didn't he? A couple of massive hits in defense.
And then had a couple in attack as well. Scored the lovely try following Appy through, but a couple of crash plays we got close, including the high tackle there. But as I said, everyone just went through their work. Caesar brought the calmness they didn't have last week. It kicked really well. Maybe slightly lucky, a couple of short kicks, with ricochets or some sluggish
Sharks
defense. Yeah, watching it bounce around. Were not great, but they led the points. Bateman did what he does. Papali, one of his better games in those colours. And you know what you get from Buller at the back. So, lots of ticks across the field. I think, they've said this is the standard. If they produce this standard, won't be the last game they win because most weeks, I'll tell you what, some of the teams were not at this standard this weekend.
And, the Sharks tried to spread the ball. The first 2 weeks, they haven't tried to spread the ball at all. And every time they tried to do it more often than not in this game, and pretty much every time it got out past the six, the ball went to the ground. So I expect them to probably try it again this week because they're going to have to. You've got to score points. You can't grind out every game of every
particularly,
week without getting bashed
particularly
up.
Particularly now coming into a stint where they're going to have no forward pack.
Yeah, they're missing three of their big guys in the middle of the field.
Something else.
Yeah, I dare say they'll probably this week against the Raiders are going to have to probably shift more towards the Manly style of play and a bit of ball movement early in their own end and try to get on the outside of some different teams. But can't take anything away from the Tigers and especially Appy. Appy was the best player on the field by an absolute mile. Couple of blokes had absolute Trindle and Braden Burns had absolute shockers for the Sharks. Like they were just missing, falling off tackles left, right, and center every time. They seemed to drop the ball every time they touched it, and that just absolutely killed that edge of the field at different times. We'll go through the Sharks first because they were the losers. Katoa was probably close to one of the better players on the field. Seemed to be making line breaks, and he had plenty of effort in him. Throw in Talakai, who made a lot of meters and was doing plenty of the hard stuff as well as, trying down in the attacking ends. They would have been the best of the backs. I mentioned Trindle and Burns had shockers. McGuinness was okay, apart from taking three heads off in the space of 10 minutes, which led to two tries, I think, from penalties to the Tigers. Brayley did an okay job, but that's pretty much about it. Rudolph was actually quite good for 42 minutes until he rolled his ankle and, out now for a month. So Seyfarth was very strong. You mentioned Stefano was fantastic. So was Galvin. They played very good games.
I like Stefano's new partner in crime, Fainu.
The three guys. Oh, sorry.
Fainu is getting through a lot of that work right through the middle as well. Don't tell me I've lost you again.
Microphone cable. There it is.
Yeah, Fainu as a partner in crime to Stefano is very good through the middle part of the game as well. Sorry, keep going.
Looking like a very strong pickup for the Tigers, to be honest. Yeah. The three guys that you mentioned, Buller, Olam and Appy, were the best. They were absolutely brilliant.
And the bloke I'll quickly mention is Fatape, who's come into first grade amid controversy, allegedly, with all talk about conflicts of interest and stuff, but his first two first grade games, he's been on Talakai and Tomoko, and I think he's handled them well enough.
Quite well.
Hasn't been rinsed. So thought I'd just mention him as a likely suspect. I don't know yeah, if he seals up that spot, fantastic. I'm showing you what else we've got. I thought if you had to really pinpoint anyone in the Tigers, I thought Charlie Staines didn't look great. He looked a touch slower than what we've seen from him in the past. I know he's on the way back from whatever, but that's if I'm really picking nits there. Yeah, exciting times. I hope they can repeat it. If they repeat, as I said, it won't be the worst season. 3 points, Nico?
Happy.
Okay, happy.
Yeah.
yeah.
Two?
Yes, agree. Yeah.
Nico gets -6 for this game.
Okay, so he's back to
-3. Right. -3. Yeah. Yeah, Abbey 3, Ollam 2, and yeah, Buller 1, with the notable mention to Hazelton, who was by far the best shark on the field. And
yeah,
I've been calling out for minutes for him for a long time, and he played 60 odd minutes and got 100, near 100 Supercoach points. Take the try out, that's a base of a point and a bit a minute. So. Yeah. I think he is the future in that front row for the. I really want to see him starting with Fenua Blake next year.
He's got a month to really, nail that down. Let's move on quickly. Lockie Galvin. Now you've seen enough of him. Likely type.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to see him probably run at the line a fraction more than I've seen in the first two games. It's been a bit more of a ball player and looking for outside men to do that. And he's a big enough customer that I think you will see very soon.
I feel like
he'll be the left foot step and he'll be jagging back into the defensive line.
I feel like it's very much doing his job that he's been told to do.
Just get into his comfortable position and then you'll start seeing him sort of pull defenses apart a little bit more.
But I think the comparisons I've seen, I think we mentioned Scott Hill, Bricho compared him to John Sutton. And once he fills it out, so it's interesting, you know.
Bit of Michael Morgan there with some passing and kicking.
So we'll see how see where he fills out into, and as you say,
and we're yet to see what kind of pace he really has either. So I'd to see him in the backfield and see what kind of toe he's got about him as well. But very confident kid, and
something to be excited about. So he's not
absolutely.
It was also positive heading when I'd played my Joker when I was 5 from 5, and Cliff, as it generally does in my life, arrived abruptly.
I've done it again. I've tipped fucking Newcastle in the last game of the round. I tipped Newcastle on the show and somehow tipped fucking Melbourne. I didn't change it, but I tipped Melbourne on the tipping comp. Fuck knows why that happened, but anyway. Yeah. I picked up a little bit of information during the week.
Oh, gosh, you're right.
Another one of those little life lessons. It comes in the form of a question. So what do you do if a bird shits on your windscreen?
I generally leave for about a month and then clean it at some point when I get shouted at. But what do you do? Yeah, why?
Well, I'd suggest you don't ask her out on a second date. Anyway, moving on.
All right. I'll hit Trev up for some material for next week now.
I've got heaps of it, but that was just one I picked up today.
Okay. She didn't leave any luggage. All right, 28-24. Eels over the Seagulls. Let's get this back on track at Combank. 20,000 there as well. Good game. Good game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably the best game of the weekend, I thought. Yeah.
Real,
apart from a couple of standout performances that blew the opposition away. As a competitive match, this was probably the one to watch. 5 tries to 4, 3 out of 5 conversions for Parramatta, 3 out of 4 for Manly, 1 penalty attempt converted from both sides. Sin bin to the Manly team, it was 16-18 to the Manly team at halftime. 82% completion, played 72%, 4 line breaks to 6, 30 tackle bust to 29, 16 offloads from Parramatta, 5 for Manly, 1 forced dropout to 2. 267 tackles played, 289, 9 errors to 13. 5 penalties conceded by Parramatta, 9 conceded by Manly. 1 ruck infringement to 3, 1 inside the 10 against the Manly side. Moses with 116 Supercoach points, Garrick with 92, and Tom Trbojevic with 86.
All started so well when that left side Parramatta defence was pants twice in the first 10 minutes, and I thought, oh, here it is. I've picked one perfectly here, and credit to them. They got back in the game pretty quickly after that, Mum.
Yeah, 2 different styles of attack in this game, and really good to watch. Styles make fight, as they say in the boxing realm. But Manly went with what they've been doing from the start of the year, which is to a determined spread of the ball to get to the outside guys and use that pace early in the match. And they really, what it come down to, it was probably Harper and the young fella out there on Dubu.
Yep.
And they surprised them early, pulled them apart twice. And the thing, the big difference in the game was that defensive deficiency really seemed to get stronger during the match, and sort of they shut them down on that edge. Whereas Parramatta went headlong through the middle, and by the end of the game, that defensive issue was getting bigger rather than getting smaller.
Yeah,
and the Manly could not stop the offloads through the middle of the field, and the consistent barrage that Parramatta put up through the middle. And like, don't get me wrong, Parramatta scored a lot of points out wide, but that was all off the back of the breaking down the middle defense.
Well, yeah, once again, it was Borlo who put them on his back.
What about that offload?
Oh, the double
pump. Put Moses over.
But when he came on, they really got back into the game once again. I think it's, the third or fourth week in a row. Has it been a bye now? I can't remember. But you're right. But he's ball playing in the line, not just for that. He was involved in another try. But just opens up space for those out wide.
Barging headlong into the middle, yeah. And their back rowers run such good lines that when Parramatta shaped to go out wide, there's still a threat on the edge. So the defense can't just pick up and bolt to a corner to defend the outside edges because you've got Hopgood and Lane bearing down with, you know, that angled run back towards the post. So if they go short, you need blokes to pick up and cover it there, and then if they don't hit that line, they go out the back, and then you've got issues out there as well. So
yeah, and then you've got Moses and Guthrie who just can't help themselves but sniff around somewhere in the middle of all of that.
100%. Dylan Brown with some nice short passing, and short kicking. Nice
touches his game. What do you make of Manly though? They, as you said, they started with the shift. Their middle, which has always been their concern, as you said, was a weakness by the end of it. But when they had big phases in that second half, they didn't have a lot of ball.
They got frustrated, I think.
Yeah.
They sort of got choked and strangled out of the game, and you saw that in the last couple of minutes with Aloe getting sent to the bin, striking and flopping and whatever else he was doing, trying to cuddle blokes for too long in the middle of the field. But, they just got broken down. It was just a systematic barrage through the middle of the field, and then once the middle got too compressed because they had to stop the barge over, they were able to throw some really nice cutouts to some of these centers and wingers who scored points for fun, really. Like Taulagi had a fantastic debut. You couldn't ask for more out of him. And well, now he goes into six this week. But
Taulagi, not Taulagi. Yeah.
Taulagi. The center. Blaze, yep. That's him.
Yeah, he's playing in the halves this week.
Yeah, he's playing at six this week. But it was really that 15, 20 minutes, same like the Cowboys, 15, 20 minutes of either side of halftime where Parramatta really took control in the middle of the field and obviously tiring forwards and that interchange rotation, which we have had a few issues around the Manly side. I don't think they quite got that right with that 15, 20 minutes coming out of halftime.
No.
And it sort of come back to bite them in the back end, to be honest.
Moses, he's gone now for 3 months, but he finally was with us this year for 80 minutes. Really, really wreaked havoc through that time, through the mid when they were in control. And what they really did well is similar to Penrith, just didn't give ball back. They just, when they weren't scoring, they held ball, making sure they were getting either repeat sets or pinning Manly to a point where they couldn't escape from it.
No, 100% right. And, it's all well and good to try and get around the outside of blokes consistently, and it's been working well for Manly to start this year. But when you know what's coming continually, because there wasn't really a point in this game where I thought Manly went back to trying to fight in the middle for too long.
Yeah.
And, they just sort of camped out and waited and knew what was coming on the outside edges. But Jake did a massive job, 50-odd tackles again. And I'd like to see him just we've mentioned it for a couple of years. I just want him to play front row. I just want him to be a front row and put his head down and run straight into the line rather than trying to get involved with the sweep plays and the passing that goes on in the back line. Like, realistically, you don't need a 13 to be a ball player.
No.
You can do that without him, especially with the likes of Brooks and DCE and Tom Tavoyevich out the back. Sometimes I think it's a detriment to trying to get the ball out there as quick as you need it to go out there. But the offloads was what really killed Manly, to be honest. Is that Parramatta loading up, going through the middle, and then you get an offload and they go again. So you're realistically getting an extra tackle or two through the middle.
Yeah.
Instead of three shots through the middle, you're having four and five and then loading up and having two or three goes at the edges. And just broke them down. They just wore them out, realistically.
Yeah. They you've covered off most people, actually, and summed it up really well. I think at the end of the day, this is a game I would consider borderline top four quality, but, I feel like these two teams are definitely going to be in the top six by the time we get to the end of the year, from what I've seen to date.
They'll be playing each other in finals, I would imagine.
Yeah, they feel like the two that are going to meet up in that middle bracket. We got to touch on the obstruction call from Manly had Dumbo. A
little bit. I think to the letter of the law, no. Like, players need to learn that once the ball goes behind them, they have to run in a different direction. Like, you can't keep just jogging into the line, which is what Jake did. Like, he wasn't running into the line. He basically got to a walk by the time that, was it Moretti tried to push him off and say, oh, he got in my way. Like, he wasn't in his way.
No, actively
to the letter of the law. Like, Moretti wasn't going to try and sprint past him.
No.
Because if he'd run up, that would have just made the gap bigger. He had to go backwards anyway to get to Tommy, realistically.
Yeah.
To stop that play. And he made the decision too late. And he took it. There was two instances in about 5 minutes where Moretti was the best actor on, got the Oscar.
There was one in a attack, he ran into the blocker or something, didn't he?
Right. You got the Oscar twice in a row in about 10 minutes. But, letter of the law, like, he should have just stopped jogging.
Yeah.
Or gone the other way, gone right, gone left. Once the ball goes out behind you, it's on you to stop.
Yeah.
So really hard done by, because there's no way in the world Moretti's getting anywhere to make that tackle, and it should have been a try. But
I agree.
They didn't make the wrong call. So.
No, exactly. You can't. It's been that way for 3 years now. What do you get? They know what they're doing, rightly or wrongly. So I can't add anything else to what you said.
Because he jogged for about 10 metres too. It wasn't like a couple of steps and he was in the line. Well, but he just kept sort of
he
jogging.
He should have been through the line the way he was jogging.
Yeah, turned right or turned left or stopped.
Like, yeah.
They've just got to get it into their head that once the ball goes past, just stop.
Yep.
Or get the fuck out of the line. Like, just don't go anywhere near the defensive line. It's different, obviously, when there's crash plays and you're right in the face of the defenders and that gets a bit. That's a whole different story, but when you've got that much time and the ball's gone that far out behind you, you got plenty of time not to get involved in the defensive line.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Anything?
I thought Homoli and Paseka were good in the middle for Manly. They both did a pretty good job. They have been doing this year. Like, Paseka's gone to another level, which we've been asking for a while. Just needs an extra bloke to give him a hand. Molly's very good. Jake did heaps of defensive work. Brooks is very good again. Brooks is close to being the best half in the comp. Realistically, he's been the best 5'8" in the comp.
It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting if Moses isn't around come Origin time. Who's going to be picked at 6 for New South Wales? Because there's not many putting forward a compelling case.
And Tommy just hits the time. That hits the line at the right time. And Garrick was sensational again. The chip over the top and the individual stuff he does. I think he's a lot stronger than people give him credit for. And he's pretty quick as well, so that all helps.
There's been more freedom in this first few rounds. People willing to kick early as well. Not yet. We talked about the early shifts, but we've seen it plenty of times. You saw it in the Dragons game. Happy to kick on the second or third and take the chances.
Yeah, especially if you're down the other end. Why not?
We've got right away from Robot Land, where it was five tackles
2 years ago, whatever it was. Yeah.
Which is good, which pleases me, but.
I thought Madison was very good in the middle of the field. Yeah. So was Tuilagi. which you don't get to say about Tuilagi that often. Hopgood and Paulo were great. Like, they were game changers in this one. Hopgood has been, every game this year. He's been brilliant again, backing up from last year. And Paulo just seems to have a new lease of life. He's obviously been told to offload, and he seems fitter than he has for the couple of years. So he was brilliant. And yeah, Moses was the game changer.
Yes. Yeah, I went him for 3, Lua Paulo for 2, and Turbo or Hopgood for 1 as well.
I gave Tommy 2, but
okay, yeah.
I'm happy. Yeah, we'll go with Paulo with 2 and then Tommy or Hopgood for the 1. What do you think there?
Good question. I'll give it to Tommy.
Like, we both went with Tom. So,
yeah, 2-point game. And as I said, I know Manly were on the wrong side of it this week, but they could easily play. I think they play themselves in 2 weeks. You'd have to think long and hard about the result again.
This game could be a 10-12-point swing the other way around if they played each other tomorrow.
Exactly.
With the same lineups. Yeah, absolutely.
14-12, Knights over the Storm. Again, nearly 22,000. And 2 tries apiece. Barn, what the rest of the stats say?
Yeah, 2 out of 2 conversions for both teams and 1 out of 1 penalty attempts for the Newcastle side. A missed 2-point field goal from, was it 40 out and 10 in from Pappy. The sideline from Pappy? He got a bit excited there, I think. Yeah. But he didn't miss it by a mile. But yeah, anyway,
it 14 ended up being a better kick than it looked off the boot, put it that way. Still missed by 20.
14-0 at halftime, 75% completion for Newcastle, 69 for the Storm. 2 line breaks to 4, 5 offloads to 6, 4 strop out from Newcastle side, 350 tackles played, 366, 41 tackle busts from either side, which you don't see out of both of these teams that often. 12 errors to 13, 4 penalties conceded to 5, 1 ruck infringement apiece, 1 inside the 10 against Newcastle. Gay Guy with 94 Supercoach points, Ponga with 86, and Wishart with 84.
Was it just me? Was this just a nothing happening game?
For most of it, yeah. There was some flashes of exciting footy.
Yeah, nothing happened nice for ages, and then it felt like Melbourne are about to steal a game again in the last 10 minutes. But
Newcastle, realistically, probably should have been 20-0 up at halftime, if not more. And they were pretty dominant, but again, they were one of these sides this weekend where once the ball sort of got past the 5-8, the attack either ran into a corner or the ball got dropped, and it was issues converting points once you got outside the edges. Really nice try from Gay Guy for the first try. Individual effort again. Skipped on the outside, bumped a few blokes, carried one over similar to Val Holmes to get the scoring underway for the Newcastle. But there was some tough, gritty stuff in the middle of the field, but it was just punctuated with error after. Like, both teams made heaps of errors. They gave away penalties. It seemed to me like each team was just happy to try and give opportunities to the other side.
Yeah.
Oh, we've had our go. You want to have a go? Fucking let's see what happens. But Newcastle, I thought, should have probably been much further in front at halftime. Both teams defended pretty well, with scramble on the outside edges, covering in and behind blokes that sort of made half gaps, and then somebody would peer in a jumper and grab a jersey or grab a boot and shut stuff down the last minute. But I expected the likes of Best and Gay Guy to probably blow the game open a little bit earlier than they did.
Fair commentary. I'm going to be completely honest. I was dozing off a lounge after a big weekend most of this game because there was nothing much happening. So feel free to add anything else
most of the game was a whole heap of scramble. There was the stuff in the middle where it got shut down, but as soon as both teams went to the edges, there were half breaks, there were blokes sort of pushing through tackles, but it was numbers in and behind which shut it down and shut it down pretty quickly. If it wasn't for that, it was an error on either side of the field. Melbourne looked like they were coming for the last half an hour of this game. Like, Newcastle, I thought, did really well to hold on. Like, I know that was 14-0 at halftime, but the Storm were coming for half an hour. It just felt like they had all the attack, all the ball for 25, 30 minutes at the back end of this game, and they were making incisions into the defence of the Newcastle team. But there was someone turning up.
Wishart played badly, but if Jerome Hughes is on the field, they win.
Yeah, more than likely.
Because he ran a couple of average kicks. He still went looking for the tall wingers, but there wasn't the precision that you get out of a Hughes.
No, 100%. I think Frizzell made like two try saving tackles in the space of about two minutes at one point over on one edge. He ran down and cut someone down in cover and then belted the crap out of another second rower cutting back in on the angle in the opposite side of the field. He was fantastic, especially with his scramble and cover defense on the edge of the field. Kai Pierce-Paul did so much work, it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
I think he got up near 50 tackles. He made a shit ton of run meters as well. He did, he doubled what he's done in the first two rounds this year for Newcastle. He was one of the best on the field.
39 tackles, 64 post-contact meters, four tackle busts. Yeah. About 150 meters from his 15 hit-ups as well, so...
Yeah, and that's pretty much double what he's been putting out since he started there. But
well, they've nursed him back into the team, so now I assume you're now going to see him ready to go and play the 80 minutes.
Which probably not great for Dylan Lucas owners, if anyone's still hanging on to him in Supercoach. But Newcastle probably saved two tries, which won in the game at the back end of this, because Melbourne were really coming for him at the back end of this game, and there was four or five try-scoring opportunities, and they only got two of them. And the other three were probably stopped by Newcastle. So,
yep. No, fair enough. Cogger and Gamble. Thoughts?
Gamble was pretty good. Cogger was more, seemed to be doing more of the kicking role. He played like the Hastings role, but yeah. I don't think he did any better than Hastings been doing it. So, it was a little, they're not moving anywhere near as quick as they were last year. Like the ball movement is slow compared to the way the ball was shifting across the field last year.
Their success was on the back of up-tempo, change of direction.
Brayley made a difference when he did come on, but...
I wonder if how much that is a conscious effort given the first 2 weeks they tried it and just dropped everything they tried. So maybe they're just
quite possibly
want to get back into the motion, but we'll see. But maybe not.
Yeah, Brayley's service was quite good when he came on and... he did look like he upped the tempo a little bit. So we'll see how that goes coming through the next few weeks. Hopefully that gets the ball across the line a little bit faster. But, they're just still not getting the ball to Ponga as quick as they need to.
No. And that's half the trick, and that's what they were so good at last year. Look, no Joe Chance.
But they seem to be waiting longer. Before, if you notice last year, once he started to wrap around, it was just straight back. Like they wouldn't pass out in front of him. They would just pass it directly to him no matter where he was and then let him work his way into the line and decide where he was going to be, whereas now they're waiting for him to sort of get three-quarters of the way around on the wrap, which gives the defense time to man up on the outside.
Yeah. Fair call. Where do we put these two teams? Do Melbourne just going to be who they are until... they get all the cavalry back? I mean, even Hughes and
Munster, Nelson, obviously.
And no Chan this week. And Bloor, I don't think necessarily looked match fit more than anything.
Well, Newcastle's looking more and more like a team that's going to fight out the bottom of the eight than someone that's going to be pushing for top four at the moment. But we're only 3 weeks in, so it's pretty hard to line that kind of stuff up.
No, I know.
Obviously, you want to be looking closer to round 10. It'll give you a really good idea of what's happening. But unless they pick up their ball, like the speed of their ball distribution a little bit, they're going to be looking to fight out the eight for mine. And Melbourne look like, someone that could push for four if they get everyone back and go well, could be fighting out for the eight if they still sort of play the way they are. But having Hughes in there, I'd say more likely a fifth or sixth at the moment, depending on who comes back and how they go when everyone gets back.
I think the bye's coming at the right time for them, to be honest.
Absolutely.
I know it's early in the season, but I do feel like they've had three fatiguing games. As much as people don't like to hear that.
100%.
They've got Warriors, Panthers.
Gives Pappy a freshen up. I think Hughes only got the 1 week, so he comes back in next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be looking much better after this bye round.
Nelson. Chan had started the season well, so you get a worker back.
Still no real word on Munster, but
no,
they'll be crying out for him to come back. So.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I feel like this weekend... has put me of the opinion that it's going to be Newcastle and Sharks.
Luck.
8, 9, 10.
Lucky to make that.
Fighting that last spot, however that pans out. Where are you going for points? That's a mighty fine question.
Oh, well, I had Gay Guy with three. Okay. I think what he did with the ball, just to score that first try. And he was the one that was making inroads down that right edge to get him into good field position. I had him with three. And I gave Grant two. I thought he was instrumental in the way that Melbourne were able to come back. He was the one that was setting up Wishart to get those super coach points with tries and try assists. But it was off the back of Harry Grant. And then I had Caelan Ponga or Pierce Paul for the one.
Give it to Kai. I think Kai has come back. Well, he's finally arrived. Let's say that.
Absolutely. Now, get off the boat.
Exactly. Where are we going next? Have you got a slap for this week, Barn? No, because he's left the screen. Let's take this home. We've got a slap for this week, Barn.
Oh, well, obviously it's the Titans attack. It's 6 points in two games. They really need, like, if they're going to defend as poorly as they are, they may as well go out and try to go down in a blaze of glory and score some points. So they release the shackles there, Des. Let them have a crack and try and score some points. Let the ball sink. And obviously, Nico is nothing like what he's been in the previous two seasons at the moment. He seems a bit lost at the moment. It doesn't help with Nakora out because he's his sort of reset go-to guy, whereas if it's not working, he uses a short ball and uses him to restart and go again. But 7 missed tackles. He did have to make 29, 3 errors, and it just – I don't know if he's been told to stay away from the left side of the field, but it seems like there's an issue there where he's been told to give the ball to Trindle, and nothing's really sort of, you know, it's either Trindle's getting into the line and the two guys outside him are doing the work, but there's no, you don't see the clean passing to put Ronaldo down an edge or Talakai through a hole at the moment. So
fair enough. I tossed up with the poor plan here, but I'm going to slap Cody Walker. I think it's now, we're now getting to the stage where he has to either take ownership of this team or not be in it. It's pretty simple.
Absolutely.
I think he's what's now 4 from last 16 now, so speaks for itself. I was pot planted Nico, and I know it's probably not fair given his previous record, 2-time Daly M or Daly M and a half, whatever he won, he just wasn't a factor this week. So
if you're going to pot plant anyone, it's the other half that was out there.
And Trindle, let's make it the halves in fairness.
2 errors, 2 missed tackles, and he made 19 run meters. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Actually, fair. That's absolutely fair call.
But if you line him up with the other bloke that you mentioned for your slap, with Cody Walker, the numbers are even worse. Cody Walker he did have 12 runs for 45 meters and a try assist, but the bloke missed 7 tackles out of 12, made 3 errors, and was nowhere near being the leading playmaker on the field.
If it makes you feel better, I'll swap them. Then we'll make Walker the pot.
No, Cody is my pot plant, and you can plant Trindle in the same pot plant with him. Two in the same pot. In the same pot.
Have you got a salute?
Oh, Tohu Harris, the tribal chief, 50 tackles, 17 runs for 130 meters, a line break assist, and he missed 2 tackles out of 50. Like, the bloke just absolute glue that holds that middle together. And
that's without him, playing,
they probably – that, like, we used to see the Warriors' middle just fall apart with 20 minutes to go. And him, and you throw in a bit of work from Barnett and Fanua Blake, they're just absolutely holding that middle together. And, yeah, there's no way they win that game without Tohu Harris on the field.
Yes. What a man. I'm going to go Appy, though. I have to. I'm obliged to go with Appy.
That's why I left him for you.
The other performance of the weekend, I think is phenomenal. And he went, apparently went to that game crook as a dog, was at gastro all week.
Yeah, right.
Wasn't well. So actually, after he dropped that ball over line, you could see, went over and
dry heaving
for a couple of minutes afterwards. But not just the stat, but we mentioned his attack, but 40 odd tackles. He scrambled, picking up loose balls 2 or 3 times through the middle there. Just an outstanding effort.
Ridiculously good performance.
And would have to be pretty close to one of the first pick for New South Wales on current hooking form, although you did make the case for Robson's just starting to find his feet. Anything else you want to take from this weekend? Or you want to go to bed?
I want to forget about it.
Okay, fair enough.
Start again, like the majority of the Sharks supporters and side, I would imagine.
That's fair commentary. I'll let you do just that. Look, the only thing I'll say is I think at the end of the day, if I had to pick one, which for some reason I do every week now, I would say Penrith is the best team I saw all weekend. There you go. I think most complete performance and scary signs again.
Roosters not far behind.
Not far behind. Now, I think Dom Young's made a hell of a difference. And Sam Walker
Teddy.
Having the keys and directness from Teddy.
Teddy has been – that's my frothing for the year so far. Just seeing him turn around and, like, everyone was giving him crap. We were doing it too. He's getting caught in corners, running around in circles, and the way he's just exploding into the line, scoring tries, setting up stuff for his outside man, been fantastic.
Couldn't agree more. Here, here. Let's finish on that note and just remind everyone, we'll be back. Are we doing a preview now? What are we doing? Talk off air.
Yeah, we'll do a preview.
Do a quick preview now. It won't be a long-winded one. We'll snap out a preview. By the time you watch this, you'll also see the preview up on YouTube. Leave us some feedback on YouTube for both previews and reviews. Subscribe. Check out rugbyleaguemerch.com. Check out Chelsea Tips. I'll be previewing the Australia Cup meet this weekend. Something to look forward to there. But nice. Apart from that, Barn, well done. I'll talk to you very soon.
Well done. See you, mate.
Take care, guys. Bye.